Sound Freak. This weekend was fucking sick. I went upstate, spent time by myself. I smoked pot for the first time in 15 years.
Okay, did you freak out?
Okay, so I smoked pot on Friday and I was like, this is the fucking best. I love this.
What did you do when you were smoking pot? When you got all high on marijuana?
When I got high on marijuana? Did people just stop saying pot? Like, is that an old person thing to say?
Grass, weed, devil's cabbage, Satan's lettuce.
Because when I was a kid, we called it pot all the time. And now when I say pot, I feel like people look at me like, oh, hey, what's up, Gramps? So I did on Friday. I had fun. I watched Neon Genesis Evangelion, which is an anime.
Cool.
And then Saturday, I was like, I'm doing this again. This is great. I did it that afternoon. I was like, I fucking love this. This is great. I'm going to become a total stoner. And then Saturday night, I was like, I'm going to fucking smoke some weed and put on a horror movie. And I smoked some pot and put on a horror movie. And I was way too high to be watching a horror movie.
Oh no. Did you get scared?
It freaked me out. I was super paranoid. Like all of like the paranoia, all the bad paranoia.
Did you hear that?
Is there a ghost?
Don't say that to me. You know that I'm sensitive. Don't fucking say that. Did you hurt?
I think I see a creature from the Black Lagoon right now.
Alex.
Why would you be scared of a creature from the Black Lagoon?
No, it's in this fucking house.
I think a mummy from Egypt might be here.
I went to a Christmas party last weekend and...
Was it haunted?
Shut up. It was like a neighborhood party and everybody that was there was like pretty cool, but they're all like Elgin people. And they told me so much shit about my house that made me feel really, really bad. Everything that they told me made me just... be like, I made a huge mistake with my life. A couple of stories about people dying on the fucking property. Several. So there's the bank robber who died, who got shot and died in the backyard, and an old lady fucking died here. Apparently the entire neighborhood just like walked through our house, freely roamed it before it got flipped. Because it was like the haunted house.
You know what? None of that shit's real. Ghosts aren't real. You don't have to worry about it.
How do you know that?
How do I know that? Because I am a man of science.
So this week on the pod, I talked to Johan Ogbjörn, which is one half of the band Sally Shapiro, which I've been shoving down your throat for as long as I've known you.
Yeah, you've been hitting me with Sally Shapiro for a long time. There's like a type of internet person where like nothing exactly is a secret about them. Like they appear on the internet, you see pictures of them, they exist in the world, but like they're still a kind of an enigma. And that is really Sally Shapiro. Can you explain like the deal with this person?
I mean, not so much, because Johan was a little cagey and he was very good at not explaining anything about Sally. Like, didn't reveal a single goddamn thing to my chagrin. And I don't know. I think I'm, like, good at, like, poking people until they tell me things. But he didn't tell me shit. And I think part of it is because he's a psychologist. So he knows he knows boundaries. He wouldn't tell me anything about the workplace that they met at all. Honestly, nothing about her. I was surprised because I thought that the alias was all about protecting her identity, but it turns out that they started with it just being an homage to like old Italo groups. And then
The name Sally Shapiro.
Yeah. And they kind of blew up pretty quickly as a band. Like they put out their music, they got all this attention. And she was just like, I don't want to play live. I'm really sorry, but I'm not going to do it. And he accepted that. And so then it really did become like about protecting the identity. So
yeah, it's really super weird. And like Sally Shapiro went into retirement in what, 2016? And then is putting out a new album next year. So is coming out of retirement.
Yeah, they actually just released a song today, a Christmas song. And he'll get into it in the interview, but I think it's so crazy that they can come to like a stopping point in the relationship of music. They literally just said to each other, hey, we're not like on the same wavelength musically anymore. Maybe we just don't make music together and still be friends. And then just like pick it back up years later. Like these people seem very mature and Swedish. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, I'm excited to hear what Johan has to say, even though he's like not going to give a lot away about Sally Shapiro itself or herself, because like their music is so fucking
catchy. It is really good. And I think you're going to enjoy this. Whee!
My name is Johan Agerbjörn, and I'm a musician. I live in Lund in the south of Sweden, and I'm 50% of the project Sally Shapiro. I'm also doing some solo music, and I'm also working as a psychologist. So that's my day job, and I have 3 kids.
So you're in Lund? Am I saying that correctly?
That's right.
Yeah. Mm. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in another city called Linköping. And the cities are quite similar. They are both university cities, and it's big enough to have what I think a city needs, and still small enough so you can cycle everywhere.
Tell me about how you were when you were a kid. Like, what were you like?
I got into electronic music at age 10.
Really? Wow. Like listening to it or making it?
First listening, like the very first pop music that I was into was like the Swedish bands Roxette and Europe. And then I had a friend who gave me a mixtape with a band which was called Italo Disco.
The band was called Italo Disco?
Now, later I realized that it wasn't a band, it was a genre of music, but he said it was a band and I believed him.
That's so mean. Okay. So what was on the tape?
Yeah, it was like a few Italo Disco artists called Eddie Huntington and Mikko Mission and Joe Yellow. And yeah, kind of poppy Italo Disco from the mid 80s. And I really loved it like from the beginning and started to buy these Italo Disco compilations.
How did it feel to hear that music for the first time?
I remember that I thought that the sound was so clear and wonderful and like just floating around in this atmosphere. I spent all my money that I got from my mom, and I also had a smaller brother. And when I was babysitting with him, I also got some money. So I spent all those money on CDs. But we were quite early with CDs. My mom had a CD player in 1989.
What? That's crazy.
So yeah, so I started, I never had a period with buying vinyl records.
Is your mom like an audiophile?
Not so much. I think she was just talked into it by some other audiophile or something.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I thought that Italo Disco was a band for quite a long time, and then I realized that okay, they have really a lot of singers. It can't be a band. It has to be something else.
That is so hilarious.
And after a while, I thought that, okay, it can be a band. Maybe it's just a disco. So I was thinking that twice a year, they have like a huge disco in Italy. And then they compile the music to this Italo Disco. That was my idea of how they made these compilations.
What music was popular around that time? Like, was disco dead then? It was kind of on its way out.
It was really the last years. I mean, this kind of 80s disco with the Italo disco and with the German bands like Modern Talking and Sandra,
mm-hmm.
that kind of genre of music, I was a lot into it. And Pet Shop Boys, I had a few friends who liked it, but after a while they started to listen to more Metallica and Guns N' Roses and Nirvana that came in the early 90s. And then I felt quite alone listening to Pet Shop Boys. They thought it was very nerdy to listen to Pet Shop Boys and, when I got into my teens. But I still kept listening to it. I didn't ever follow any trends or anything. I just listened to what I liked myself.
What was your first band?
When I was 10, we had a band in my school, which was called Dojuna, which means like the sneakers.
What? Really? So it was like a kid band of 10-year-olds?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I played keyboard and backing vocals. And the bassist is now like heavy metal bassist in Sweden in a few different bands.
So when did you transition into like making electronic music?
I got a keyboard at age 14, maybe.
Okay. And what keyboard was it?
It was a Yamaha keyboard, PSR 3500. So it wasn't like a professional keyboard. It was more like a keyboard where you had a bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do some small programming, but I still have it, and I still have used it on some songs. So it has some cool sounds.
What songs have you used it on?
Like, for example, the first Sally Shapiro song, I'll Be By Your Side, it plays the bass in that song.
So great.
And I also used it for the same bass sound. It's on this new Sally Shapiro single, Forget About You. That bass sound is really, really great and comes from that keyboard.
I think it's so wonderful that you've hung on to this one for like your entire life and you keep using it. Like, that is beautiful. I think for a lot of people, myself included, getting that new piece of gear that you think is going to inspire you and somehow dramatically next level your sound is a black hole that a lot of musicians tend to fall into. It's really refreshing to hear that you've been basically returning to the same synthesizer your entire life. How did it feel to like finally get it and play on it? Do you remember that feeling?
They had these music shops in my city. So so I went to record shops and every week, and I also went to these music shops where they had these keyboards that you could like try to play on. Probably took a year or two to save the money to it, because it cost maybe $1,000.
Oh my God.
So it was a lot of money for a kid. I didn't have much knowledge about how professional people did electronic music. So that came much later. So I just tried to find my way.
Yeah.
I remember I was really glad.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of music and tracks, which I recorded and still have these recordings left.
Wow, that's so cool. I can't believe you still have those tracks from when you were a kid.
On the latest Sally Shapiro single, Forget About You, there's there's an extra track on the single,
mm-hmm.
Which is actually the original version from 1994.
What?
Which was made on that keyboard. So there you can hear what it sounds like. Yeah.
You made that song, it started in 1994?
Yeah, so it's the original version was made in 1994, and then just now recently I developed it and we made lyrics to it.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's so funny that it existed for all these years and I didn't really believe in it, and then it was one of Johnny Jewel's favorite track on the on the albums.
So is it? It's a part of a bigger album that's about to be released, right? On Italians Do It Better.
Yeah.
How did you get hooked up with them?
I'm a big fan of Johnny Jewel's various projects, mm-hmm. like
Chromatics
and Glass Candy, mm-hmm. and Desire. I've had some contact with him earlier. I actually made a remix for Glass Candy, but I emailed him and just asked, would you like to collaborate in some way on our new album? And so we thought that we ended the Sally Shapiro project in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And it was silent for a few years. And then...
Why did you guys decide to end it?
I think we had a period where we didn't have so much musically in common, me and Sally.
Mm-hmm.
I was more into abstract or ambient electronic music, and she was more into pop music without electronic instruments.
Okay.
But it was just like a period, and then we were quite inspired again, and hey, why don't we make more Sally Shapiro music? And so we decided, let's make a new album.
How did you and Sally meet?
We were working for an organization. We were met at an office.
What kind of office?
Sally wants to keep her life quite private. So in respect of that, I don't want to say exactly what kind. So let's just say that it's like a workplace.
Okay, an office job.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we became friends,
mm-hmm.
but we were at some kind of event that we were singing, and then I heard her sing, and I reflected that, wow, her voice would probably suit pretty well on my productions, and that she had quite of a Italo disco voice.
She very much does.
So I thought, okay, I should ask her if she wants to sing on one of my tracks.
Yeah. What kind of event are you singing at with your coworkers?
Yeah, I mean, it was some kind of after work Christmas.
Like karaoke Christmas. Or something?
Yeah, or more like Christmas, where you eat some Christmas cakes and light up some candles. And
that's so cute.
We have a quite big choir culture in Sweden, I think. A lot of people sing in choirs, and we like to sing.
So a lot has been written about her shyness,
mm-hmm.
and how it's kind of kept her from singing out in public and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the whole alias and all that. But she was singing in front of her coworkers. I would rather chew a piece of glass than sing in front of my coworkers, but I can get on a stage and sing and it's fine. You know?
Right. I think it was more like singing in a group.
Okay.
It wasn't singing so solo, but I noticed her voice. So,
how did it feel once you discovered like a shared language of music? How did it feel to play music together for the first time?
So for me, it was. I was really glad because I'm not so used to people in general being into the same kind of music as I am, especially in that time, like in 2004, Italo disco has had a revival, but at that time, it was generally viewed as quite like cheap genre of music and very old-fashioned. So I was very glad that, I found someone who likes this.
So, when you started playing music together, how did the idea of the alias come up, and where does the name come from?
Sally Shapiro. A lot of these Italo disco artists used English sounding pseudonyms like Valerie Dore, for example, her real name, the singer's real name, was Dora Carofiglio.
What? I did not know that. That's so cool.
Yeah, and then the person you see on the photos is called Monica Stucci. So Valerie Dore was like a combination of Monica Stucci and Dora Carofiglio.
Are the pictures of you?
Yeah, we never went that far to like be a complete fake. Yeah. But they always used the English pseudonym. So we thought, okay, let's do this in the Italisco way. So we choose an English.
When you made the alias, it wasn't necessarily like something that you were doing to protect an identity. It was more like just an homage to acts of the past.
I think that was the first idea. And then Sally was finding it very comfortable to be able to hide behind it and not reveal her real name and so on.
I mean, as a musician and I have a day job, let me preface this by saying I don't perform or record very much anymore. But when I did, it was always very exposing when it came to my musical identity and the identity as a professional and keeping those separate. You know, it's impossible. Once the cat's out of the bag, that's it. People can know anything about you. So you've always kept your identity public, but do you have any like regrets about that?
I think it has worked quite well. I haven't been so like famous here in Sweden. So it's not like people recognize me on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it would have been a bigger problem if that was the case.
I always wish that I had made an alias too, though. If I could go back, I would have done it.
But you sing and like I don't know, maybe that's you expose more of yourself, maybe.
Yeah. And I mean, also just the silliness of like having to talk to your coworkers about the art you make. You're just like, ugh, I don't know. Get out of my life. I don't know.
Yeah.
So keeping your identity separate. Does the alias ever complicate things for you? Like you're kind of the voice box, I guess, of Sally Shapiro in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, I do more interviews. She's more restrictive. And I have all the contacts with record labels. It's a bit weird in the beginning. It was, everyone didn't know that I was actually also a part of the project. I'm not just like a manager for it.
Yeah.
Maybe things would have been easier if we had a band name. Because some people think that it's like more of a solo singer. And when it's actually more, we are more like a duo. So, but most people have got used to that by now. So
yeah,
it's not a big problem.
What's your writing process like?
In Sally Shapiro, I'm quite trying to have some kind of pop structure in it because Sally is very poppy.
Okay.
She doesn't like this like abstract music that I'm doing on my solo albums. And I think she also has a really good taste in music for what is good pop.
Yeah.
So if she likes a song and wants to sing on it, then it probably means that it's good.
Did you have a lot of your first record, Disco Romance, written before y'all collaborated and produced your first single together?
No, most of that music was made in the year before it was released, maybe with one exception or so. And then there was one cover version also, and Our Christmas was a cover version on a small indie pop band.
What? I did not know that. What was the band?
No, okay. You need to check him out. Oh, he's called God. Nixon. The first time that I saw your face on a cold December night. And the guy behind Nixon, who's called Roger Gunnarsson, he's also been involved as a co-writer on a lot of tracks. So I've probably made between 10 and 20 songs together with him.
What? Okay, that is insane. I didn't know that.
His version of Annual Christmas was actually on one of those mixtapes that Sally sent to me.
Oh.
So And then when we were making Disco Romance, we thought, okay, this song could actually work like an Italo Disco song. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. So yeah, we made the cover version of it. And then we sent it to him, and it turned out that he was already a Sally Shapiro fan. So we had like a great mutual admiration, and that's good foundation to build a musical collaboration on. So,
oh man, that must have been so dreamy to like have a musical hero like be a fan of your music. How did it feel to find that out?
Yeah, well, it was like surrealistic. A lot of things that happened in the first year of Sally Shapiro were surrealistic, because I had been making music on my own for a lot of years and never released anything on a proper record label. And then suddenly we got a lot of fans in a very short time.
Yeah.
So it was quite shocking, and surrealistic is the probably the best word to describe it. It was difficult to believe what was happening.
Was it exciting? Was it scary? What was it like?
It was exciting, and also it was fun, but it was also a bit stressful. Like, okay, what should we do now?
Yeah.
Should we make a tour around the world, or what is the idea? And then everyone wanted Sally to play live, and for a while we were planning that, and we were doing a few DJ sets, like just to try.
Yeah.
How it's to be on stage, and then Sally found out that this is not her thing at all.
Okay.
So that was also a process that was quite tough for both of us before we like settled and okay, we're not the band doing live shows at all,
like ever.
Just a studio project. Yeah, and I do DJ sets, and I like that, but that's it. So Sally is she's doing interviews and photo sessions, but not music videos and not live performances.
Does the live performance stuff, does that bum you out? Like, I mean, for me, playing live, I mean, that was just the most fulfilling part of this when it went well.
Yeah, I can understand that. And for a while I was sad, because I had a dream to make a living on my music, and probably I could have done that if we had been touring, but instead I became a psychologist, and I'm really happy about that, and I think in the end it was better for me.
So you weren't a psychologist like when you all met? It's something that kind of evolved?
Yeah, I was an accountant by then, so I was doing accounting for the organization where I met Sally, for mm-hmm. example. And then I tried to make a living on my music, and then after that I decided, okay, I'm gonna study to psychology. It was also the money from Disco Romance that made it possible, so I'm really also thankful about the success of Sally Shapiro, because it changed my life in that way. So
yeah.
So I became a psychologist. I'm really grateful for having had that opportunity.
Yeah.
In my life. Did I forget to call? Did I just leave it all?
This episode was hosted by me, Stephanie Franciati, and my bud, Alex Goldman. As always, our theme music was by the namesake of the show, The Synth Freak from Austin, Texas. Check out their YouTube and subscribe. You'll thank me later. And while you're at it, subscribe and like, rate, and review to our podcast. It's super helpful. The music in this episode was by Sally Shapiro, Nixon, Pet Shop Boys, and my new favorite band of all time, Dianar, Johan's band from when he was 10 years old. They sound like the Swedish Shags, and I'm in love with them. Try to say Swedish Shags 10 times. It's insane. As a special holiday treat, I've asked the guests of the pod to help me put together a mixtape for y'all. So I'm going to be posting the details about that in the description of this episode. Check it out and have a great holiday.